Welcome back to Golf Today. Butch Harmon has worked with more players than he cares to count through the years, but none more famous than Tiger Woods. During their time together, Tiger won 8 of his 24 major starts, 34 official PGA Tour events, and was named the Tour Player of the Year 5 times. Butch also spent 8 years as Phil Mickelson's coach, during which Phil won both the 2010 Masters and the 2013 Open Championship at Muirfield. He also had a notable impact turning Ricky Fowler's game around more recently, culminating in Fowler's first win in 4 years, the 2023 Rocket Mortgage Classic. It's hard to do justice to the resume of Butch Harmon. He's worked with everyone who was anyone in this game, and he's descended from great stock as well. His father, Claude Harmon, of course, the 1948 Masters champion. And Butch Harmon joins us now from his home in Las Vegas. Butch, it's great to see you. How's retirement? Because I'm guessing you don't really have your feet up and you're probably still fielding a lot of calls from the locker room for guys.
Well, I'm kind of semi-retired, Eamon, to be honest with you, and happy to be with both you and Jordan this morning. It's kind of nice, you know. I kind of set my own schedule now and teach when I want to teach and who I want to work with, and it's been fun, but I'm staying busy. At 81, I'm not about ready to shut it down.
Well, Butch, absolutely not. No, nowhere close to shutting it down, and the teaching never stops. I'm told there's a notable house guest you have there currently with you in Las Vegas.
I do, actually. Two-time Masters champion Jose Maria Olazabal, one of my best friends, is with me for a few days. Even at 59 years old, Ollie's trying to prepare himself to be ready to go to Augusta next week. So it just shows you, doesn't matter how old you are, Augusta is an important place for all these guys.
That's certainly going to get the bookmakers' attention, maybe change Ollie's odds for next week as well. But what does the Masters mean to you and your family, given the history, both in terms of you as a coach, but you're also your family connection?
It's everything, Eamon. I mean, you know, Dad won in 1948, won by 5 shots, the only club pro really to ever win a major. And ever since then, you know, it's just something that I've gone through my whole life. I was asked the other day, how many Masters do you think you've been to? And I said, it would probably be easier for me to tell you how many times I haven't gone to the Masters. It's a special place for me. I love the fact that I still do work with Sky Golf in Europe, and I do the Masters broadcast with them. And I look forward to that too every year. So I love the place. I was there last month playing with a good friend of mine, Nick Evans, who's a member there. So I try and get there at least once every year to play. And then I look forward to the Masters always.
Butch, I want to talk about one of those many names of yours that you've coached and have a close connection with, and that's Rory McIlroy. He readies himself to head there to Augusta next week, the elusive major that he's trying to capture. What is it going to take for Rory to add that notch to his belt and that already impressive resume?
Well, I think any time a major comes along, you look at how a guy's game is trending coming into there. And Rory, as you saw, his win at the Players and then earlier this year at AT&T at Pebble Beach, played well in the weekend in Houston. I think his game is trending wonderfully. I think the big key for Rory, he has really worked hard on his shots from 150 yards in to get a little more control of those. I thought he did well there, especially in the playoff on 17 at the Players, most beautiful flighted little 9-iron that he hit in there to get the job done. I think he's trending well. I think the big thing for Rory is he's got to relax when he gets there. Obviously, he wants it more than I could ever tell you. You can understand that. It's the only major he hasn't won. He's had his chances and let it slip away. But I think, you know, he and Scottie Scheffler obviously are going to be the two favorites going into Augusta.
But you worked with Tiger Woods when he won at Augusta by 12. You worked with him in that epic 2000 season when he won the U.S. Open by 15. You've been around the best for a really long time. Was that the best golf you've ever seen played?
It's the best golf I've ever seen. Anybody have a year like that? What was it? 9 wins, 3 majors, scoring average of 67 and change. Tiger Woods, when he was on, you know, from 99, say, to 03, 04, probably had best control of his golf ball in modern day times since I've seen, say, Lee Trevino, who was another great ball striker, and Ben Hogan, the all-time best ball striker. It's sad that Tiger had another injury and he won't be able to play next week at Augusta, because I know he always looks forward to it. But let me tell you one thing, that stretch in 2000 was pretty impressive.
Butch, I'm always fascinated as a former player on the basketball side, the coach-to-player dynamic. And so many times you hear about in any sport, when a player's uber-talented, are they coachable? Well, you're coaching the titans of the sport, the best of the best. What is that initial obstacle from coach to player you have to get over? Because they've already gotten there on some talent, but you're trying to take them to yet another level.
Well, I think there's two things. You're an instructor and you're a coach, and they're different. And how you handle them is important. Every one of the guys that I've worked with in my 35, 40 years of working with tour players are different. And you have to understand their personality. You have to understand when to kick them in the rear end. You have to understand when to give them a hug, when to make them laugh, when to back off and give them some space. And I think because I've done it for so long, I have a good ability of judging each one of my players on what makes them tick and how to get the best out of them. Having said that, the Masters is probably the easiest major to prepare for because it's always at Augusta National. So at the start of the year, you start your preparation with players on if they have to change some of their shot shapes or they need to change a ball flight that makes them play a little more consistent at Augusta. You can put those in early. So for those things, for the players that I have that are playing at Augusta next week, we've already done all our work we're going to do. And when we get there, it's just kind of fine-tuning.
But you've also worked in the past with some guys who now play on the LIV Tour and have for the last several years. Do you sense that playing on LIV has been either beneficial or detrimental to anyone's game, or do you not think it actually makes a real difference when they're at that level?
Well, it's been beneficial to their bottom line in the pocketbook, that's for darn sure. I didn't have a problem with anybody that went to LIV. I think you have the right to go play wherever you want to, but you have to realize once you made that decision, there are ramifications for your decision. You're not going to be able to go back over and play on the PGA Tour. Once you fall out of the top 50 in the world, you're not going to get in as many majors as you used to. So I think you have to look at those things as a negative. The positive is I think you still look at guys like Bryson DeChambeau or Brooks Koepka who have won majors even though they're playing on LIV. You've got Joaquin Neiman who's played phenomenal over there that will play in majors. I think the downside is that you only play 54 holes. There's, 54 players in the event usually. Maybe only 15 or 20 of those have a chance to win. So I think for some people, they're not as competitive as they could be. For others, I don't think it makes any difference. I think Brooks and Bryson are two great examples of players just come right back over and win majors when they come out of there. I wish in some point in time that we can get together, get all the best players playing on the same tour at the same time. I think that's all we all want to see. And let's hope that someday they can figure this out.
Yeah, that division and the prospects of a deal seems to be a great talking point in the game these days. But do you think overall the game is in a bad place because of that, or simply that it could just be in a better place?
Well, it's an interesting question. I mean, I think that player-wise, we've got the best crop of young players we've ever had. We see that every week when we watch a PGA Tour event or a DP World Tour event, how good these young players are. The downside is for the viewing public, a lot of people don't know who these people are. They're used to the stars being there. And so I think TV ratings have been a little off because of that. I think we all want to see the best players in the world get together. If we go back in time, there was an AFL and an NFL and an ABA and an NBA, and the owners of these teams in different leagues realized we had to get together to bring all the best product to the sport we can. We don't have that at the moment. Would you say that LIV has hurt golf? I would say in a way, maybe just a little bit. As I said before, I don't fault anybody for going over there and do what they did. I think we'll see John Rahm play good at Augusta. He's a LIV player. So I don't know. I think the if you've ever been to a LIV event, it's like a big corporate event, to be honest with you. There's music playing everywhere. It's a shotgun start. I'd like to see them play 72 holes. I'd like to see some sort of cut. That way they can start to get some world rankings and we can get some of these good players back up in the world rankings. Because if you're not in the top 50 in the world and you're not a former Masters champion or a major champion within the last 5 years, you're not going to get in Augusta. And that's too bad.
Butch, I want to ask about one of those stars who, yet another name that you've coached in Victor Hovland. And well documented, you know, he's got an appetite for learning and the tinkering with the swing, and it's been an up and down journey, but he can still put it together sometimes, but sometimes it gets away from him. What do you make of, I mean, he's not a unique case study in that regard. Some guys go through this. What do you make of the journey that Victor Hovland continues to perpetually be on?
Well, I was so happy to see Victor win a few weeks ago. He's a wonderful young man. He's a member at a club that I'm involved with in Florida, the Floridian. I see him there when he when he practices. You know, a couple of years ago when he won the end of the year, the Tour Championship, he could have been said was the best player in the world. And then all of a sudden he went in a slump. He changed coaches. He went to like three different people in 1 year. And I think you see Victor now getting back to being Victor. Sometimes I think you have to have a fall like that to give you a little kick in the rear end to boost yourself to get back. And go back to basic fundamentals. Go back to what made you so good. And he appears to be doing that, and I'm happy for him.
There's nothing that gets sports fans more worked up, Butch, than Hall of Fame debates. And who should be there, who shouldn't be there. You're not in the World Golf Hall of Fame, which strikes most of us as a pretty significant omission. Does it bother you at all?
Well, it would be a great honor. I mean, to be honest with you, I was told that last year's voting, I missed by one vote of getting in. If it ever happens, it would be probably the greatest honor in my professional life. If it doesn't happen, there's nothing I can do about that. I've just tried to be the best I could be at what I do, and I just let my record speak for itself.
I tell you, it would be a hell of a speech that you were giving that night, Butch. We all know that much. I want to ask one final question. You mentioned your memories go back so long at Augusta. You were, I guess, 4 or 5 years old when your dad won. So you have a lifetime's worth of memories at Augusta, both working and family. Is there one particular moment that stands out in your mind that happened at Augusta through all those years?
I'd have to say Tiger's first win in 97. And I'll tell you why. As I started with Tiger when he was a 17-year-old teenager, and one of the things I loved about Tiger Woods is he always wanted to learn about the old-timers who came before him. I don't think the young golfers of today spend enough time realizing the players that came before them that allowed them to be where they are today. And Tiger always had that inquisitive part of him. I want to know about your dad when he won, and I know you know Ben Hogan and all these people. Tell me about it. I told him a story. Tiger said, my dad won the Masters in 1948. He said the greatest feeling in the world was walking up the 72nd hole with a 5-shot lead because he knew there was no way he couldn't win the Masters. And I said, someday that's going to happen to you. Now, he was a young 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old when I was telling him the story. And we go to 1997. I can remember standing behind the 18th green. It was getting late in the evening. You know, it wasn't as bright as it was. I still had my sunglasses on because I had tears in my eyes. And I said, I'm thinking to myself, wow, we talked about this possibly happening, and here it is, 5-shot lead. No, I think it was like a 12-shot lead when he walked up the 72nd hole. So I don't think I'll ever forget that. That was pretty special to be involved in that.
Butch, special indeed. Look, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask the question before we let you go, as we're still in the March Madness as it's going right now. Last day of March, you're a University of Houston grad. Your Houston Cougars are headed to the Final Four. Are you dialed in at all with this one?
I wouldn't say I'm a Houston graduate. I went to the University of Houston. I didn't stay there very long. I am a big Houston Cougs fan. My daughter, Michael, is a graduate of the University of Houston. Well, they got a tough road to beat Duke. There's no doubt about that. But I'll tell you what, if you watch them play, they're fast, they're physical. Defensively, they're probably the best team in the Final Four, but they're going against the best team in basketball. It'll be one hell of a game. I know that.
A1 analysis right there from Butch. I love it. I love it, Butch.
Butch, thanks for joining us. Look forward to seeing you next week down in Augusta.
Thanks for having me, guys. Anytime, it's my pleasure.
Absolute icon right there, Butch Harmon. Stay with us as we continue our Masters look ahead. Rory McIlroy could complete the career Grand Slam with a win next week in Augusta, but he revealed an elbow issue that has been bothering him. Could this have any impact? We discuss next.
Rory McIlroy made a charge yesterday in Houston, made it interesting. Here he was, 11 under par, the par 5, 8th hole, his second shot. Patting the draw, it's going to find its way to the back edge of the green, which is where the pin is located.
His best work still ahead on this par 5, 8th. Dancing, I'm dancing indeed. Eagle putt, pure. I will get him to 13 under, and here comes Rory.
Two holes later on the par 4 10th, this one for birdie. Inside top 10 in putting on tour this year, and that's why. That got him to 14 under par. Let's skip forward a couple more holes. Here he is on the par 4 12th for birdie. rolls in another, gets to 15 under, finished there after a round of 64. He talked to Kira K. Dixon.
All right, well, here with Rory McIlroy after that 64 last bogey putt there, but otherwise a really positive day. You had eight straight threes at one point. You said earlier in the week, this week was all about filling up your confidence bucket. How much do you think you accomplished that?
Yeah, you know, the last 3 days were really good. Actually made a slight adjustment to my driver yesterday. I went to the range and took the loft off a little bit, and I definitely drove the ball better today. So that was a positive. Saw some putts go in, and yeah, I felt like as I went on during the week, I got better and better, as the scores sort of suggest. So yeah, look, it was a good week. I still feel like I've got some stuff to work on, but yeah, overall a solid week, and you know, nice to have another week to sort of get ready and fine-tune my game going to Augusta.
Speaking of the next week, what does that look like as the next time we will see you will be at the Masters tournament?
Yeah, I think just, you know, working on a few things. Right elbow's been bothering me a little bit, so maybe just get some treatment on that and make sure that that's okay going into Augusta. But, yeah, just, you know, I've got my coach Michael Bannon coming in tomorrow. We'll do some work and, you know, just make sure that everything's in good shape for a week's time.
Let's continue the conversation on Rory with a Golf Today roundtable as we welcome in two faces that only a mother wants to see on a Monday afternoon, which is our Golf Channel senior writers, Rex Hoggard, Ryan Lavner. Rex, I want to start with you. Rory mentioned the elbow discomfort. Is that cause for concern?
I think all of us who are journalists were screaming at the TV for a follow-up, and I'm sure there'll be plenty of follow-ups a week from now at the Masters when we do have a chance to talk to him about it, because looking back at Rory's career, he's been relatively healthy outside of that one unfortunate kickabout incident. So this is certainly something that my ears perked up. I don't know how much I'm really concerned, because you look at what he did at Memorial Park, and it seems to me he checked all those boxes to fill up the confidence bucket, as he called it. If you looked at, he was fourth in the field, strokes gained tee to green. He was top 10 in driving distance. I know it wasn't a very difficult driving test, but with an eye ahead, looking to Augusta National, the way he putted, his short game seemed sharp. Everything he wanted to do, he got done. So outside of the elbow comment, I think it was a very successful week.
You know, Lav, to me, it almost feels like this is the perfect scenario for a guy like Rory outside of the mention of the elbow injury, because he's playing some of his best golf. He didn't go ahead and win here this past week, so he comes in with that momentum to go chase that elusive Masters opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the perfect scenario that Rory is entering Augusta National in some of the best form that he's ever had. He's never won two PGA Tour events heading into the year's first major, so he has to have a lot of confidence there. And I'm not all that concerned about the elbow issue either. You look at the speed numbers, they were right where they should have been. The distance numbers were right where they should have been. He mentioned he's going to be working with his longtime swing coach, Michael Bann, this week, so it doesn't seem to be inhibiting his practice or his preparation in any respect as well. And the two things that I think that have really stood out, actually three things that have stood out about Rory McIlroy's game that has to give him the most confidence heading into the Masters this year. His short game is as tidy as it's ever been. His putting is as consistent with the work that he's done with Brad Faxon, is as good as it's ever been. And I think his course management has been as sound as it's ever been, sort of borrowing from the Scottie Scheffler playbook. I think that has really paid dividends over the past 3 months. I'm very curious to see, of course, how that's going to play out at Augusta National as well.
And Rory McIlroy is actually at Augusta National this morning. We're going to have more on Rory when we have a more Masters-specific conversation with you guys later in the show. Rex, I want to get to an issue that was source of minor controversy. Yesterday, a suggestion that Alejandro Tosti was slow-playing Minwoo Lee in the last group. Now, Alejandro Tosti has denied that. He's been on social media and said that that is not the case at all and offered his rationale for it. So in time, we're going to find out who said what in this particular scenario. But even if that was the case, does that matter? Is it a big deal? I mean, gamesmanship is an essential part of almost every professional sport that's out there, and it's something that champions have to overcome in every other sport. Why should golf be any different?
And golf is slow. We've talked about it. It's all we seem to talk about sometimes. Pace of play. It's a slow sport. You better be used to it. So if anything impacted Minwoo Lee, my guess is it was not Toasty's pace of play. I will go back to the eighth hole as well. It took them more than 30 minutes to play that hole. So I will give him a monsoon of credit for being aggravated in that situation. I think all of us probably would have felt the same, that let's just get on with it. We all know how slow this game could be. Our colleague Jim Bones Mackay made some observations on the golf course. I don't mind him doing it, whatever it takes to maybe try to get in your opponent's head. I really don't mind that. I will point to the idea it seemed to backfire on him. He bogeyed two of the next three holes. I'm talking about Toasty after the eighth hole. So whatever it is he was trying to do didn't seem to work, at least early in that process. And it certainly didn't slow down Minwoo Lee, but I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, I mean, Toasty had at least a brief explanation on Twitter, but he was not asked about it by any of the media that was covering the tournament in Houston. And so we don't know whether this was gamesmanship or if he was annoyed at the slow play that was taking place at Memorial Park. And like, players do these sort of little tips and tricks all the time to gain at least a little bit of an advantage inside the ropes, whether it's walking slowly, putting out first, crowding on the green. I think like all of that is fair game. And I think as viewers and observers, we like to see that. What it can't be is disrespectful or undermining the competition. I'm not saying that's what the case here, but Jim Bones Mackay, who was on the call for NBC, was pretty adamant that there was sort of a line that had been crossed by Toasty. But again, he was not asked about it after his round. Minwoo Lee was not asked about it. Ryan Fox was not asked about it. So we're also flying a little bit blind in this circumstance.
Rex, let's shift to glass half full here. Let's talk about that champion for the first time on the PGA Tour in Minwoo Lee. And look, he was erratic off the tee, only 22 fairways of the 52 available that he hit, but a course that allowed for him to be able to do that and still go ahead and be crowned champion. Your biggest takeaway from the 26-year-old finally getting over the hump?
I think you go back to how erratic he can be, and I'm just not talking about off the tee, really, with his game. Just go back a few weeks ago to the Players' Championship. Through two rounds, he looked like he was going to be the player to beat and then just didn't have anything on the weekend. Finished well outside the top 10, and I think that's sort of been the MO of his career. It's a young career, but it's, you look at, you are what your record says you are up to that point. He didn't play well at Bay Hill. Again, didn't finish well at the Players Championship. And I'll go back to something that Jason Day told him. And if you're going to have a mentor that has seen every side of the spectrum, it's going to be Jason Day. He's seen the top of the mountain and certainly the bottom of the mountain with various injuries. And Jason Day explained to him that all you can do, the best you can possibly do, is give yourself an opportunity on Sunday. And I think that's what he gave himself, and he took advantage of it. Not only did he get it done, but I would give him style points, because you did it with Scottie Scheffler, the world number one, breathing down your neck. You did it with Gary Woodland, a major champion, breathing down your neck. Rory McIlroy doing what he did in the final round. Not only did he get it done, but he got past those mental hurdles that seemed to be holding him back.
Lav, I want to wrap up this part of our conversation by referencing a little trailer that Live Golf put out for a documentary series that's airing next week on the guys on that tour. And in the trailer, there's a lot of the guys talking about how the tour has been mocked, how mean things have been said about them repeatedly. Does the whiny crybaby routine with these guys ever end, or is that all they have?
I mean, you'd hope it would end by this point, but it's clear that being perpetually aggrieved is a popular, and it even can be a profitable place to reside in today's society. Like, it's clearly going to inspire and rile up your fan base, but it's not going to help with growth. And I think that's why you're seeing a player like Brooks Koepka in a recent interview, you know, suggesting that Liv is not where they need to be in year four in terms of gaining traction with the mainstream sports audience. I also couldn't help, Eamon, like this Live series that's going to be put out looks an awful lot like Full Swing that the PGA Tour has been doing over the past couple of years. You look at the Live duels that's going to be happening with, you know, content creators. That looks a whole lot like the PGA Tour's creator classic that has been rolled out over the past year as well. And so you're seeing both sides, you know, perhaps with an understanding that a deal may not be eventually met between the PGA Tour and the Saudi PIF, sort of getting entrenched and doing their own thing and hoping that resonates with their fan base as well.
We're going to take a quick pause here. More from Rex and Lav on a round table as we dive into a Masters preview when we return. But a reminder, if you're in the market for a podcast, check out the Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lav. And if you miss any of Golf Today, you can too find that, our best interviews, on the Golf Today podcast. And be sure to subscribe to the Golf Channel YouTube page. Back with more on Golf Today coming up next. Come on into the Golf Today studios. He's Eamon Lynch. I'm Jordan Cornette. An exciting first hour. We're going to try and sit around and do it here again in the second hour. As for that first hour, Butch Harmon joined us, and what a riveting conversation that was. Still certainly has a firm grip of his fastball, a wealth of knowledge and experience to draw upon and even look ahead. But until the moment you asked the question, Eamon, I had no idea that he's not cemented in golf's Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it does seem an oversight, and I think a lot of golf fans would see it as an oversight. Maybe there's some kind of institutional bias against instructors, because Harvey Pinnock is the only instructor who's actually really been put in the Hall of Fame over the years. And to me, this is, it's an ongoing problem that I have argued about with the Hall of Fame for years, is that they do have a tendency to get around to people who are worthy in the Hall of Fame. They get around to them after they've died. They did that with Peggy Kirkbell. She lived 95 years, and the Hall of Fame put her in 2 years after she died. Tom Weisskopf was put into the Hall of Fame after he died as well. Thankfully, Butch is still very robust, as you said, hasn't lost his fastball. He's 81 years old. He deserves to be in that Hall of Fame with the resume he has. And if the process by which people are chosen isn't putting Butch Harmon in the frame for that, then the process needs to be fixed.
Yeah, what are we doing? As for those who didn't get a chance to hear that riveting conversation with Butch Harmon, you can go on the digital tip and check it out, Golf Today Podcast. It's worth revisiting. In the mode of revisiting, let's go back to Sunday, and we witnessed an absolutely exciting conclusion to the Texas Children's Houston Open on Sunday. Minwoo Lee locking up his first PGA Tour victory in his 56th career tour start. He converted his first career 54-hole lead, or co-lead on tour, into a one-stroke victory over Gary Woodland, a great story in its own right, and held off world's number one Scottie Scheffler. What a moment for him, and maybe gives him some momentum drawing forward. We've seen a lot of guys break through this season, in this young season already. He joins a list of first-time PGA Tour winners. Thomas Dietrich, he ran away from the field there in the Phoenix Open. Brian Campbell outlasting Pat Geeter in that playoff. And, of course, you have Highsmith. And then Minwoo Lee joins that group there. So an impressive start for Minwoo Lee. Maybe he can take that into Augusta. After the win, though, he joined our Akira K. Dixon.
Well, for the first time in his career, Minwoo Lee is a winner on the PGA Tour. You had to make the two-putt on the last. When you put it close there, what was going through your mind as you walked away when you were waiting to make the tap-in?
Yeah, it's one of the best feelings in the world. You know, I won Scottish Open 3 years ago now, and it's one of the better feelings in the world. You just work so hard every day, and to have, you know, a 6-inch putt to finish, to have the wind is amazing. Very proud.
You had to overcome some adversity out there today. You had the par save on 8, the water ball on 16. Walk us through those moments and how you were able to keep your cool.
Yeah, 16 and 8. Pretty much the exact same drive, I think. Just a bit high off the face, bit toey, and it's gone right. Club face was open, and yeah, I think it's one of those things that I have to work on when I don't want to hit it left. You know, on 8, obviously dogleg left to right. The last few days I hit it a little bit left, so I kind of wanted to get it out right. So that's something that I'll just have to work on and get better at. It's not a great feeling when you do it, especially on 2 relatively easy holes. And especially when the tee's up on 16. Scotty's made birdie on that hole, and you know, I think he was pretty close on 17 too. So it's tough. It's tough to do it on a Sunday, and you know, even the provisional ball, that's nearly harder shot because you got to hit it somewhere down there. And then you know, had a 9-iron in and a little bit of mud on the ball, and I was just hoping for it to come out straight, and it did. And yeah, it's just a very, very tough day.
Yeah. How aware were you of what Scottie Scheffler was doing on the golf course?
Well, there was one guy just screaming what he was. He obviously had some money on him, and I was just trying to do my thing. I had a lot of support from the Houston crowd, though. Thank you so much for, you know, coming around and supporting me. But you could see it. You know, he's right in front of you. It was a bit slow on the back nine, so we saw pretty much most of his shots. He made, I don't know, 3-4 birdies in a row, and now I was playing really solid. Maybe a couple putts could have dropped to make it a little bit easier, but you know, that happens. I've played so well over the past 4 days, months, and I'm glad to get my name on the trophy.
Well, Minwoo will be a name to keep an eye on as the 2025 championship season is underway on the PGA Tour. Rory McIlroy took home his second player's title earlier this month. Now all eyes will turn towards the first men's major of the year, Masters, which begins next week. Now, last year, it was Scottie Scheffler who earned his second green jacket. Final round of 68 at Augusta National was enough to win, and that was part of what was an incredible season for the world number one. After the final round in Houston on Sunday, Scheffler was one of several players who spoke to the media regarding preparations for Augusta National.
At the start of the week to now, how much better do you feel about your game as you head towards Augusta?
Yeah, I definitely feel better. I feel like I can still clean up a few things in my swing. You know, my ball striking wasn't as sharp as I would have liked to, or like for it to have been this week. But overall, I mean, yesterday and today, I felt like we're improving in the ball striking. You know, yesterday the score, I don't think showed it, but today the way I struck it, especially down the stretch when I really needed to, I hit some really nice shots, you know. Good iron shot into 15, you know, good iron shot into 16, good one into 17. Like I did some things that I really, really liked under the gun, and you know, good pitch shot on 18 as well. To still give myself a chance, and so did some things that I'll reflect on that were good, and you know, some things I can sharpen up a little bit.
I have two, Scotty. First one is, what are a couple, maybe three things that you saw this week that you like going into Augusta?
You know, I like the way my swing started to feel over the weekend. You know, I felt like I hold a good amount of putts this week, especially under pressure on the back nine today. I felt like I hit my lines really well and did some good things out there. So definitely some positive momentum going into next week.
Okay, last question is, next couple of weeks, what's left for you and where are you going to do it? Like, what kind of work?
I'll just go home and practice like I normally will. Just stick to my routine. You know, I'll get some good days of practice in with Randy, and then, you know, I'll have a couple play days as well where we get out on the course and see how things feel, and head over to Augusta on Sunday.
Leaving here and going towards Augusta, how much confidence do you kind of carry, especially from this last round?
Yeah, still feel like I've got some stuff to work on. Still don't think like my game is absolutely 100% under the control I would want, but you know, it's nice to have a week to work on some things. I've got my coach Michael Bannon coming in tomorrow, so we'll be working at home and making sure I'm you know, game feels good going into the Masters. You know, this week going forward is just about feeling as comfortable as I can be with the things I've been working on, which is sort of iron play, wedges. Obviously, short game is really, really important around Augusta as well. So, you know, work on those things over the next few days, and you know, hopefully, I'm feeling good going in there.
Leaving here, how much confidence do you have going to Augusta?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely better than what it was coming into this event. So, yeah, the confidence is growing, which is great, and I'm just happy. I feel like my game's in a solid spot, and now it's just about executing and getting the ball in the hole.
Well, Eamon, it's about that time. Let's dive into the odds, courtesy of DraftKings. And no surprise, two of those gentlemen we just heard from have the shortest odds. And Scotty and Rory, you see Xander in there. John Rahm looking to turn the page on what was a forgettable major season last year, coming over from LIV. Coming over with some momentum in this one, has obviously fared well there in Augusta. Rex and Lav, kind enough or foolish enough to join us again here on the round table. And Lav, let's start with you here. Certainly a lot of people in the odds reflected feel like this is a two-horse race coming into Augusta. Pretty reasonable, eh?
Yeah, I think that is reasonable. I think there's a clear upper tier that consists solely of Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy. I think you can feel confident in both those players for, I think, different reasons. Scottie Scheffler, the course history, winning two of the past three Masters as well. But I think you have to like the way that Scottie has trended with his game, particularly what he did in Houston. Led the field in proximity to the hole, led the field in scrambling, putted great three of the four rounds at the Houston Open. I think it's just very much fine-tuning as Scottie tries to end the quote-unquote longest drought that he has had in his career over the past 2 years. As it relates to Rory McIlroy, I think there's plenty of confidence as well, because this is the second best strokes gained total he has ever had leading into the year's first major. The only question, I think the reason why he's second according to the odds makers, despite Rory playing better than Scottie in the calendar year 2025, is his course history at Augusta National. In particular, guys, his opening rounds. Just two of his 16 opening rounds have been in the 60s. You might think, okay, just get off to a solid start. Don't sort of shoot your way out of it. In fact, you look at the last four or five winners of the Masters, they have been between 66 and 67 on average in the opening rounds, it's essential that Rory McIlroy gets into the proper headspace heading into the Masters and the week as he begins his preparation.
Rex, is anybody under more pressure next week than Rory McIlroy in your mind?
I think in a weird way, what he has done the last few weeks actually might help that. And I'm going to go to what Lav was just talking about when it comes to the odds. Him not being the favorite probably helps a little bit, because if I asked you to do the blind taste test and I took the names out of it and just showed you those two resumes, Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy, you probably would have made the argument that maybe Rory should have been the favorite. But certainly there's always going to be pressure for him to attempt to do what he's attempting to do, complete the career Grand Slam, win the green jacket. We all know it's been hanging over his head for his entire career. Yes, I think there isn't anyone in that field that is going to feel the pressure more than Rory.
Rex, John Rahm is that guy who has a lot of juice coming into this one. A very different feel than last year, obviously, for him. Why is a good reason to believe in John as we head towards Augusta next week?
I think, and I've made this argument about John in the past, he was a world-class player. He was a major winner. He was a world number one before he left to go to live, and I still believe he still has that inside of him, despite what he did last year in the majors, as you pointed out. I will go back to last year's Olympics, and it was interesting having a conversation with a colleague of mine on the night before the final round, and the colleague pointed out that that was probably the most important round of the year for John Rahm, because it was going to be the last time that fans, at least general fans, got to see him compete on a world stage, and he really struggled. We know what he did in the majors last year, so clearly there was something last year that didn't click the way it had beforehand, but I think when it applies to the Masters and everything that means to him, and we've seen him play well in the past there. I'm curious to see how he plays this week at the live event at Doral.
Lav, is anyone not in the field at Augusta National? This has been a debate we've seen over the last couple of years, with this idea that some deserving people don't make their way into major championships. Who's this year's imaginary Taylor Gooch?
Boy, I mean, it's hard to pick anybody out. I mean, Joaquin Niemann got a special invitation. Terrell Hatton has played his way in based on his performance getting inside the top 50 in the world ranking. It does not feel like we're necessarily missing anybody. And I think that's a credit to Augusta National recognizing a player like Neiman's importance, as well as, you know, keeping open some of those pathways for players to prove it and get it on their own merit, as Terrell Hatton has done through the DP World Tour and sort of his play. So, no, I really don't feel like we're missing anybody, which is hard to say when you have a typically short field that you do at the Masters.
Rex, is Xander, as we looked at those odds, he's still positioned with relatively short odds heading to Augusta. We know about the year he had last year. Any reason to believe? Well, certainly there's some reason, but what can we expect from Xander start of this major season this year?
I was kind of surprised to see where he was, it was in those odds, and not that he's not a major championship winner. But look at what he did last year. It was by far a career year and a historic year. But you look at what he's done this year, he is kind of what his record says he is. I'll go back to the Players' Championship. There was a level of frustration that I don't think I've ever seen from Xander Schauffele. And this stems directly to, it was an injury, a rib injury that lingered for a long time. I think he was aggravated with his game, and I think he was put in a position where he expected just to land right where he was before the injury, and we all know that doesn't happen. And so he put a lot of work in the week of the Players' Championship. My guess is he has been grinding since then, but I am a little surprised to see him as high as third, just based on what he has and hasn't done this season.
Rex, it's not often we talk about people who are not competitively relevant at the Masters. We may be doing that this year. Angel Cabrera back in the field for the first time since 2019. In the interim, he served 30 months in prison for domestic assault and intimidation of two former partners. Are you anticipating that that is going to be a storyline next week, and this debate over whether or not he ought to be in the field, or is it enough that he served his prison sentence?
I think it'll be a story. I think there'll be plenty of reporters, myself included, who will want to talk to him, since it's been so long since we've seen him at the Masters, everything that he's been through. I don't think it'll be one of the top stories, considering everything else that's going on in the world of golf, and that we have two players in Scottie and Rory who are dominating the game in a way that kind of makes it compelling on a whole different level. But yes, I think 100% everyone's going to want to talk to Angel about what he's been through and his road back to Augusta.
You know, Lav, as we look at Bryson, he obviously injects a lot of life into the tour when he comes back over for this for these majors. Augusta will be no different. But he's been quiet in his live season thus far. Is there any reason to take a little bit of that in terms of analysis coming into next week?
You know, I think that's reasonable. He's sort of been streaky on live. I'm very curious to see what he does this week at Trump Derail, sort of a championship test. You look at some of the international venues that LIV players have played over the past 3 months. A couple of them have been very tight, taking driver out of his hands, a little bit claustrophobic. At least at Trump Derail, he's going to be able to open it up and sort of play big boy golf, which is obviously what you're going to see in the major championships. Augusta National has befuddled Bryson DeChambeau like no course before. I mean, prior to last year, his best finish came when he was an amateur, competing as the reigning U.S. amateur champion in 2016. Seems to have figured out something, at least he did last year. And so, you know, if he can drive the ball on a string like he did in 2024, it just opens so many more opportunities for them to him to attack hole locations that other players would be a little bit more conservative to. And so I think this week could be a great indication of where Bryson is with his game as it relates to how it could potentially translate next week to Augusta National.
Rex and Lab, we appreciate it. You guys never disappoint, inching towards the best time of the year, Augusta and major season. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, there was a competition within the competition this weekend at Houston as players tried to crack the top 50 in the world ranking. Those who made it by the end of the day Sunday locked in their invitations to Augusta National. Tom Hoagie was already in the field, so Michael Kim, number 52 in the ranking starting the week, while Ben Griffin entered at number 53. Both had their fate in their hands on Sunday and waited for the conclusion of the Texas Children's Houston Open.
I'm proud of the way I fought and gave myself a lot of chances, and it'd be a dream come true to tee it up at Augusta. It's been a dream since I was a little kid to be there. We'll see what happens.
Is it fair to say that there was a game within the game out there for you today?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm trying my best to concentrate on each individual shot. Us golfers, we say that all the time, and it's really, really difficult to do that when you have external factors like getting into a major or, you know, a top 10 gets you in the next week if I didn't have status or whatever it may be. You still got to focus on each individual shot and try to see it. And so the best thing for me I could do is in between shots, try not to think about it too much. Think about other things. Think about basketball. All right, let's check this to the score of the Houston game or whatever if we had to wait on a tee. Stuff like that to try to get it off my mind. But, man, when you have a dream as a little kid and you have a chance, there's a lot of emotions over every shot. I mean, I'm tearing up right now thinking about it. But, yeah, we'll see what happens.
How do you feel about your chances of getting in the top 50?
I don't know. I truly don't know. I'm sure I'm pretty close to that right now. What's Ben Griffin
T31,
at?
You're T31.
I, to be honest, I don't know. Made a nice par putt at the end there. So we'll just see.
Is something that was on your mind today?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I made some pretty nervy swings on the back nine there, thinking about it. My driver cracked on, I don't know exactly what hole, but it was cracked. I was trying to get a replacement on 18, but rules official took too long for it, so I just hit it anyway.
Cracked driver on 18?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. I guess did it feel like a game within a game out there today?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm just trying to make the best score possible, and that doesn't change whether I'm trying to get into the Masters or any other day. But, that extra added consequence didn't make it feel any easier, for sure. We'll see.
Certainly had Georgia on their minds. And here's how it all shook out. The updated official World Golf ranking. Michael Kim got that last spot at 50th. Ben Griffin just on the wrong side of the cut line at 51st.
So, Eamon, we see so much ugliness on social media. This was rather warm. Obviously, Mike excited. Michael says, next stop, let's go, with the Masters and the logo right there. Ben Griffin with the classy response saying, that was crazy. Congrats, man. You've been on a heck of a run. To which Michael Kim replied, well, just go win Valero, and I'll see you there. A win, of course, in this week's Valero Texas Open would lock up an invite to the Masters. So you'd love to see that type of banter right there. Speaking of Augusta National, a special week in the women's game as we get set for the 6th edition of the Augusta National Women's Amateur. We'll be joined by one of the competitors in this week's field. That's on the other side here on Golf Today. Welcome back to Golf Today. Let's flash back to the 2024 playing of the Augusta National Women's Amateur. It was England's Lottie Wode who won by one stroke over Bailey Shoemaker. Both women are back to compete this year as Wode looks to become the first multiple-time winner of this event.
Well, the first edition was played back in 2019 with Jennifer Kupcho taking the title. The tournament was cancelled in 2020 due to the coronavirus pandemic, but returned in 2021 with Tsubasa Kajitani winning on the first hole of a sudden death playoff. 16-year-old Anna Davis, of course, prevailed in 2022. 2023 was Roseanne's year, and as we just mentioned, Lottie Ward, the defending champion. Well, a top five finish at the Augusta National Women's Amateur was a welcome addition to the resume for Auburn graduate student Casey Weidenfeld. She hopes to continue succeeding on and off the golf course, heading into her second appearance at Augusta National.
Hi, I'm Casey Weidenfeld. I'm going into my graduate program at Auburn. So I started riding when I was in fifth grade. I rolled my ankle, of course, and I wasn't allowed on the playground. So one day I just started writing a book. I was young and loved the idea of creating something. So I came up with like character names and like backstories, and I kind of just kept on going until I was finally done with the third book. So I wrote three books in a year and a half, I think. It's made me very disciplined because I tried to write every day despite my golf, and golf also disciplined me with the writing. Both of them really went hand in hand.
There we go.
Thank you.
If you ask me, like, if a Weidenfeld was ever going to be able to play Augusta National, like a competitive round, I'd say you're crazy. Casey picked up golf super young. Every time I'd go to her house, like every Christmas, there'd be more and more and more and more trophies.
Yeah.
We have like a family email chain. So every time Casey does something, it gets sent out and a bunch of people get it and we all reply and comment. It's like an article in the Sun Sentinel or like a Auburn All-SEC academic, and it's been really cool.
I'm excited to say I'll have my master's degree. It's always been my goal ever since I decided to do dual enrollment and graduate early. I'm like, I want my master's. I'd love to do both. I would totally be down for writing at the same time as golfing. I mean, that's the dream, right?
One woman we will see compete this week is Oregon sophomore Kiara Romero. She has four runner-up finishes this season, and last year, Kiara represented the U.S. in the Arnold Palmer Cup, competed in the U.S. Women's Open, and finished runner-up in the Women's Patriot All-America Invitational. Kiara will be making her second start in the Augusta National Women's Amateur. This awesome photo with the invitation, all smiles, of course. And Eamon, how cool is this one right here? Rocking her Augusta National jersey, Kiara Romero threw out the first pitch at the Oregon Ducks baseball game just a couple weeks ago. And Kiara joins us now, all smiles yet again, here talking with us. And Kiara, look, we don't have the video of the throw, so naturally, me and Eamon have to ask, how would you rate the toss from 1 to 10? Give it to us honest here.
I think I would give it a solid 7. Like, it was dead straight, good strike, but just a little slow. So if anyone was up there, they definitely hit a bomb off it.
Well, a straight ball flight certainly going to help you this week at the Augusta National Women's Amateur. Kiara, Jordan mentioned you've had four runner-up finishes already this season. Your confidence has got to be pretty high as you head to Champions Retreat in Augusta National.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like I've been playing pretty good. Consistently in contention going to those last days, but I feel like I'm just gonna try to like keep doing the same thing. You know, it's just another round of golf, and yeah,
another round of golf for certain. But there's playing golf, and then there's Augusta, Kiara, and having been there once, this being your second go, what did you take in deposit mentally from the first go of at Augusta that you take into this coming up appearance?
I feel like I might have put a little too much pressure onto myself last year, so I'm just going to try to play my game out there and just enjoy the moment that I'm in and just have a lot of confidence going into it. So,
Champions Retreat, where the first two rounds are played, Kiara, seems to be a pretty underestimated part of this event. What do you think is the key to kind of keeping yourself within the guardrails for those first two rounds to make your way to that final round at Augusta National, because it is a pretty demanding test?
Yeah, for sure. I feel like last year I started off really strong in the first nine holes of the tournament, and after that it all kind of went downhill from there, but I feel like I just like was really focused on making the cut and just put a lot of pressure on that because we all want to make it to Augusta really badly. But I think this year I just really want to focus on hitting those fairways and putting the ball in the right spot on the green, because it can get pretty tricky up there if you miss in the wrong spots and you can end up like 40 yards off the green. So really got to just focus on that and just keep my game plan going.
Kiara, the collegiate experience is one I want to ask you about. National Freshman of the Year, the first one ever achieved that with the Ducks. You're now in your sophomore campaign. What has the collegiate team aspect been like for you, the experience thus far?
It's been awesome. I love my team and my coaches, and we've been doing really good. We won one of our tournaments this season, and we've been consistently in the top three at every tournament. So it's been a lot of fun, and it's just been really cool to be playing a part of a team, because we're really used to just being on our own out there, and just having a lot of backup with the team and like coaches is pretty cool feeling out there.
You did mention that you'd missed the cut last year at the Augusta National Women's Amateur. You did get to play a practice round, as everyone does at Augusta National, just not the competitive round. What was your favorite moment or favorite part of that course that you're looking forward to getting back to, Kiara?
I think the difficulty of the course, people kind of underestimate it going into it, but last year it got pretty windy out there and those greens were rolling and it was pretty hard to get some spin out there too. And for me, I like already hit the ball really high. So having trouble like holding the greens and spinning the ball out there was pretty tough, but I'm looking forward to giving it another go this year.
You know, Kiara, golf certainly doesn't define you. You have multiple interests outside of it, one being an interest deeply in fashion. You always got to have that release valve from the sport because it can overtake you. What exactly, as you look in the fashion world, what interests you in that for those that don't know that about you?
I think it's just pretty cool that we can kind of dress into our own personalities out there. And for me, it's kind of like just the way I'm feeling out there. Maybe I'll want to like be a little bit more bold with a brighter color, or sometimes maybe I'll go with like a all white outfit that's kind of inspired by a lot of tennis players. And so, yeah, sometimes I'll throw in a little ribbon in there, and yeah, just kind of like to match the vibe. And I always like to say, if you look good, you feel good.
Kiara, I read where you said in the past that one of the obstacles you've overcome in life was a fear of public speaking, which is quite a common one, although there's certainly no evidence of it here today. Are you comfortable potentially giving that speech Saturday night at Augusta National when you win?
Yes, of course. If that happens, I'll definitely be up there for it.
Well, let's stay dreaming right here, right? The champion's dinner. Let's say you do go ahead and win this thing. What would you be serving to your colleagues?
Oh, boy.
We haven't got quite there yet, maybe. We don't want to put you too much on the spot.
I haven't exactly thought of that one, but I was looking at Scotty Scheffler's, and I really like his, so might go copy his.
Well, there are a lot worse things to do at Augusta National than copy whatever Scotty Scheffler's been doing the last few years. Kiara, best of luck to you this week. We look forward to seeing how it plays out.
Thank you, guys.
All this food chatter's got me hungry. Still to come, we share one of the great stories of the weekend as 2019 U.S. Open champion Gary Woodland put together a dominant round on Sunday for his best finish on the tour since 2019. More on his incredible road back to the top of his game when we return here on Golf Today.